Welcome to another episode of the Left of Lansing podcast with Pat Johnston. A progressive insight into Michigan's political and cultural world. And of course, an entertaining podcast designed to shine a light on how to make Michigan's political machine work for the people. Now, from the Left of Lansing headquarters, located in his attic, here's the award-winning Pat Johnston.
Oh, yeah! Welcome to another edition of Michigan's premier progressive podcast. I am Pat Johnston, and I've got so much to say here this week, but not much time to say it because coming up in a few moments, Erica Payne from Patriotic Millionaires will join me to talk about the fight to give hardworking service workers a higher minimum wage while phasing out tipped wages. Yes, 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 that has been a fight in Lansing, as many of you know here for the last couple of months, ever since a state Supreme Court ruling said that the minimum wage and paid sick leave laws from 2018 were watered down unconstitutionally by MAGA Republicans and Republican Governor Rick Snyder. But ever since that correct ruling, MAGA Republicans, along with some Democrats in the state legislature, have been working to appease their restaurant lobby donors by screwing over the workers and watering down those bills again. I'll have more to say about this in just a sec, but Erica Payne from Patriotic Millionaires will be joining me shortly. Speaking of the state Supreme Court, this is news that we progressives and the sane ones here in the state of Michigan, this is news we needed to hear as we're begging for some good news nowadays. Michigan Supreme Court Chief Justice Elizabeth Clement is planning to step down by the end of April. Wow, wow, wow. This was sort of unexpected, and it's a gift, though, to many of us in the state because this means Democratic Governor Gretchen Whitmer will get to appoint a Democrat to fill Clement's seat, giving Democrats a 6-1 advantage on the court. Now, Clement was appointed by Republican Governor Rick Snyder back in 2017, but to be truthful, she has shown the ability to cross over and side with Democrats on the court here at times. Let's not forget, she sided with Democrats to allow a proposal to reach the ballot in 2018 that would create the Independent Redistricting Commission, which virtually ended the gerrymandering stranglehold MAGA Republicans had on our state for a number of years. So she did a decent job at times, but still, this is some much-needed good news in a never-ending news cycle. Remember to please subscribe to the show on YouTube and like the various videos that I'm posting there. Yes, that's where you can also get all the weekly episodes, the Monday musings, the Friday shorts, but you can check out other videos that I posted there as well. So please make sure to subscribe to the show there on YouTube and subscribe to the podcast wherever you are listening. Subscriptions do make a difference in our business. But also, let everyone else know about this podcast and other progressive podcasts here in the state of Michigan, because the whole point of this is to spread the progressive message with as many people as possible. And we need your help in order to make that possible. Now, let's focus here on Michigan, because I have a question. Where's Governor Whitmer been since the election? I mean, how come I haven't seen her at any of the anti-Musk Trump rallies at the state capitol? Why is it that all I heard after the election from Governor Whitmer was how she'd really like to find some common ground with the same guy who mocked her for having a kidnapping plot against her? Why is it when it's time for the governor to prove to everyone that if there's one lesson that she learned from this past election, it's that Democrats must do a better job at showing up for the working class in the state? Why is it then when we really need her, she's disappeared? Now, I'm asking you this question because let's get back to the Michigan State Supreme Court, where it made shockwaves late last year when it ruled that the MAGA Republican majority back in 2018 broke the law when it watered down a ballot initiative that would raise the minimum wage to $15 an hour, phase out the tipped minimum wage for service workers, guaranteeing a living wage for them, and increasing paid sick leave. The court ruled last year that the laws as written must go into effect by this Friday. I mean, this was a major victory for the working class in the state, which desperately needs a living wage and desperately needs and deserves paid sick leave to ensure that they can care for themselves when they're sick or that they can care for their sick loved ones. And again, who really wants to be working next to somebody who is sick? But MAGA Republicans gained the majority in the state house, and they proclaim themselves to being the real working class party. Yet, for all of their talk and for all of their bluster, House Majority Leader Matt Hall's first item of business was to follow in the footsteps of his MAGA predecessors and yet again water down these bills in the favor of corporate lobbyists. So, at the behest of the restaurant lobby, Hall and the rest of his MAGA Republicans voted to reverse the phasing out of tipped wages and instead keep it at 38% of the state's minimum wage. 38%. What, you thought MAGA Republicans were really going to care about the workers? Silly people. But here was the even more troubling part. Six Democrats in the House voted along with MAGA Republicans to cut the pay of our service workers. I mean, it was obvious that the restaurant lobby got to them too. Now, the Michigan Restaurant and Lodging Association publicized a survey from 2024 saying by keeping the law as it is supposed to be, it would lead to a loss of an estimated 40,000 to 60,000 restaurant jobs. Really? Oh, really? I mean, that's such an outrageous number. And then the same lobbying group said in 2022 that 91% of restaurant owners say that they would raise prices on menus and rooms, and 58% said that they would lay off employees to offset the changes to minimum wage and sick leave. Oh, wow, they are pretty good at those little scare tactics. Now, the Detroit Free Press, however, reported on the effects on restaurants and their employees in places where tipped wages were phased out. And it says, and I'm going to quote here, data from the restaurant software company Toast doesn't show a big disparity in tipping rates between states with a tipped minimum wage and those without one. For the period covering January 1st of 2024 to March 31st of 2024, customers tipped on average about 19% in the seven states without a tipped minimum wage and about 20% everywhere else, the Toast data shows. So people were still tipping their servers, even if servers are receiving a higher living wage, which is what I and many other people out there have always suspected. Oh, and guess what? In states and cities where they have phased out tipped wages, you won't believe this, but they still have many restaurants there, and they still have employees, and even more, people will still tip those employees. I'll be darned. But at least service workers in those cities and in those states are not beholden to the whims of the customer who might not tip as much because, you know, maybe they feel like the worker just didn't work hard enough for them. How's that sustainable for people? Anyway, last week, the state Senate then, where Democrats hold a majority, held a vote for a compromised bill in which tipped workers would receive 50% of the state's minimum wage, a little bit better than the 38% that MAGA Republicans passed in the state house. And also the phase out of the tipped wage would never happen. That compromise won and received eight Democratic senators' support, including Senate Majority Leader Winnie Brinks, who, by the way, did not hold a press conference after the vote. No, really. And as of this recording, the House just voted to okay that Senate bill and is now headed to Governor Whitmer's desk. Governor Whitmer doesn't have to sign it. However, in order for this new updated law to gain immediate effect, it would need 25 Senate votes, and that's not happening. And if that doesn't happen, the original intent of the law will go into effect on Friday. So all may not be lost just yet. But there is something worse and grossly disturbing about this whole episode. A state senator that I have praised in the past for taking some bold stances and some bold votes attacked some progressive friends of mine over this issue, and the senator did it in an ugly way. And I'm talking about Livonia Senator Dana Polhanke, who voted in favor of the pay cut for service workers, and I criticized her on Blue Sky, and she responded by saying, "I listened to actual Michigan restaurant workers as I contemplated my vote as Majority Vice Chair of Regulatory Affairs. I heard all the testimony. I stand with our restaurant workers and proudly voted yes." Did she really, though, hear all the testimony? Because if she had, she would have voted with strong progressives who went against it. But on Twitter, our good progressive friends with the Still Social were calling out all of those senators who voted against our working class Michiganders and who voted with the restaurant lobby. and Distill Social criticized Senator Polhanky over there as well. Now look, the ladies at Distill Social will have plenty to say about this, I'm sure, on their Point of Disorder podcast, and they can handle themselves just fine, I'm sure. But Senator Polhanky attacked them by posting their pictures on Elon's site and telling them that it's time for them to get into the spotlight. I mean, she essentially doxed them, not in that she posted their addresses or phone numbers or something like that, but she posted their pics in the hopes that it would cower them into silence. And it was sad. It was really sad, but also spoke volumes to me of where the Democratic Party is going wrong here of late. First off, Gina Keller and everyone at Distill Social are pretty public to begin with. And like I said, they host a podcast on top of it. They didn't hide behind anything. They've never hid behind anything. And if you don't mind, I'd just like to read to you some things that I posted in defense of Distill Social in this whole episode. And I said, what happened over the weekend to Distill Social is unforgivable. It's one thing for hateful MAGA groups to come after us, which we expect, but when a few Michigan Democratic state officials attack us with the same fact-free venom and cruelty, it's counterproductive and it's sad. Since the election, many have said that we need a messaging ecosystem like MAGA has. That's true. And that's exactly what Distill Social has been effectively doing for years. They flood digital media with content exposing MAGA's cruel policies and behavior. Distill Social also has a great podcast pushing a progressive agenda while highlighting the spread of autocracy across the country. They put themselves on the front lines in the hopes of making as many people as possible be aware of how MAGA policies are hurting the state and this country. Those of us who decided to push a progressive message via digital media did so knowing that we would face the wrath of MAGA. We do so because we not only want to push back against MAGA, but we want to help be part of that progressive ecosystem that many people out there are clamoring for. What happened this past weekend proves to me that some Democratic Party consultants are clueless, simply clueless, and they cling to this 90s Bill Clinton, Dick Morris belief that hippie punching plays much better than hitting MAGA, who the same Dems told us were a threat to the country, by the way. It proved a stark reality that I've known far too well in all of my years in media. Many Democrats, not all, mind you, but many Democrats just don't understand the power of messaging and connectivity. And until they do, they'll struggle to keep majorities in the state legislatures and in Congress. Everyone at Distill Social has my utmost respect for everything that they do to bring a progressive message to the people, a message that also helps state Democrats as well. It's a shame that some state Dems simply don't understand the game, and it's why they continue to be on the wrong end of it. It is time for the Democratic leadership to understand it's best to embrace those of us who are fighting for real change and who are fighting to stop the spread of MAGA white Christian nationalism happening across the country. MAGA understands messaging, though, and their people love going on shows, podcasts, social media, and sharing all of their content and information with as many people as possible. And let me tell you, there have been a few state Democrats that I have contacted to appear on my show here over the last few years, and their people tell me, sorry, but now's just not a good time. I think they see us as expendable, and then they wonder why they're in the minority while complaining that we don't have a messaging ecosystem like MAGA has. Yeah, you do. You just choose not to use it. Also, getting back to this whole minimum wage thing, a question to the Michigan Democrats who voted with MAGA to slash the minimum wage for thousands in the state. If the minimum wage and paid sick leave laws were so unpopular, why did Rick Snyder and the MAGA majority stop it from reaching the 2018 ballot? I mean, if headed for defeat, why block it? We know exactly why Rick Snyder and the MAGA Republicans blocked it. The initiatives were not only popular and were going to easily pass, but Snyder feared the initiatives would help bring more people to the polls to not only vote in favor of these initiatives, but also to elect more Democrats. That's why they blocked it. It's not brain surgery. Everyone knows that. And yet some 7 years later, some Democrats helped Republicans block the bills that Republicans originally blocked to hurt Democrats and independent voters. So I hope some of you are proud of yourselves here today. I really do. I hope the contributions you get from the restaurant lobby were well worth it. Meanwhile, lots of workers could be hurt from your actions, and we wonder why we're losing elections. Coming up to talk more about this is Erica Payne from Patriotic Millionaires. You are listening to LOL.
A podcast that believes in using common sense to move Michigan into the future. And by common sense, we mean progressive sense. We've all seen what 40 years of Republican leadership did to this state, and we refuse to go back. It's Left of Lansing with Pat Johnston. You can follow Pat on Facebook or X. Pat still calls it Twitter. Or on the Gram, Threads, and also on YouTube. Subscribe to the show on YouTube and wherever else you listen to your podcasts. All right, I think we gave Pat enough time to catch his breath. Let's get back to it. Here's Pat Johnston.
As Jessica just said, the best way to reach me is via email. That's leftoflansing@gmail.com. Or you can find me on Blue Sky and on Twitter. Yes, I'm still on Elon's site because I refuse to see ground to those guys over there, no matter how much of a cesspool it has turned into. But leftoflansing@gmail.com is the best way if you'd like to have more of a one-on-one discussion with me about anything that I bring up here on the show or on the Monday Musings or Friday Shorts. Or you can leave your comments on my YouTube page as well, since I post all the shows and videos there. Well, let's get back now to talking about how just enough Democrats in the Michigan State Legislature signed onto a MAGA Republican bill to water down the upcoming minimum wage increases and a phasing out of the tip wages. And as of this recording, the State House has passed the Senate's compromise bill in which service workers who receive tip wages, like servers and bartenders, will earn up to 50%, just 50% of the state's minimum wage by the year 2031. No, not tomorrow, not next year, but by 2031, workers earning tipped wages will have to wait to earn at least 50% of the state's minimum wage. That is atrocious. It still has to pass the Senate once more, and that's where there's still some hope, because 20 senators voted for this compromise of a bill, this junk bill, yet 25 senators are needed for this new law to take immediate effect, meaning if there's no immediate effect, the law, as originally written, goes into effect within days, and that's a good thing. But let's go back, okay? Again, the Michigan State Supreme Court ruled that the MAGA Republican majority in the state legislature back in 2018 acted unconstitutionally when it watered down the original intent of the law back then. They prevented the minimum wage and paid sick leave initiatives from reaching the ballot, which Republicans were allowed to do by law, but then they were supposed to pass the laws in the state legislature. However, they were not allowed to drastically change the intent of those laws, and the state Supreme Court said that's exactly what they did. The court ruled that the new wages and paid sick leave laws were to begin later on here this month, but then MAGA Republicans, who are now in the majority in the state house, and just enough Democrats in the Senate, in which Democrats have the majority, voted to once again water down the bills. And like I said, there's still some hope that maybe this bill will not take immediate effect in the Senate, which would be a good thing, because this compromise bill is a compromise that'll compromise thousands of workers across the state. Joining me to talk more about this is Erica Payne, founder and CEO of Patriotic Millionaires. Erica, thank you so much for taking a little time to talk more about this frustrating story here in Michigan. I appreciate it.
So happy to be here, Pat. It is such an important story, and it has humongous implications for people in Michigan, all over Michigan, and frankly, across the country. It has enormous political implications for your governor's potential presidential run. And so there is a lot riding on this situation in Michigan. So I was thrilled to be able to come in and have a chance to talk with you about it. It's a really important moment for you all and for the country.
Before we get into it, can you just tell our listeners what Patriotic Millionaires is all about?
Absolutely. So Patriotic Millionaires is a collection of wealthy people with incomes of at least $1 million per year or assets of at least $5 million per year. The group came together 15 years ago now to protest the extension of the Bush tax cuts by President Obama, a Democrat. And with that small opening, we had several millionaires say, you know, for the good of the country, raise my taxes. And since then, this movement of millionaires has grown into a global exercise. We have hundreds of millionaires here in the United States, several in the UK, and then we've just opened a chapter in Canada. Let me tell you what the group focuses on. We focus on two things: paying people more money and our members paying higher taxes. So we're looking at an economy, Pat, where we basically are becoming even more unequal, even more quickly over time. Working people have seen their wages flat for decades, while the richest people in the country are number one, not paying taxes, and number two, accumulating a level of excessive wealth that is threatening our democracy. You saw the podium with the three broligarchs up there behind President Trump, if that didn't tell you all you needed to know. But listen, we've got a situation in the country where working people don't make enough money and the richest people in the country don't pay enough taxes. And we aim to fix that. I want to make one point. We don't aim to fix it because these are a bunch of bleeding heart liberals. These are business people and savvy investors. And they know that the economy will work better when working people have money to spend. We've got a 70% consumer demand-driven economy. And they know that our democracy will only survive if the richest people in the country are taxed enough that their wealth does not become sufficient power to dismantle our democracy. So both of those elements are, we think of wages and taxes as the two bookends of a strong economy. You've got to have a high and strong wage floor, and you've got to have a reasonable tax system, or your country is going to reach a level of inequality that's going to be problematic, as we have.
Inequality, of course, is what we're dealing here in Michigan and obviously elsewhere. But I'm sure you're keeping tabs on what's been happening here in Michigan. Republicans, as I said in the opening there, grabbed control of the state house this past election. And, you know, one of the first moves that they did to solidify their so-called working class stance was to do whatever the powerful restaurant lobby wanted and keep the tipped minimum wage at 38% of the state's standard minimum wage. Now, in the Senate, where Democrats have the majority, every Republican senator, along with eight Democrats, voted to raise the tip wage to around 50% of the state's wage. So essentially, this just gives the restaurant lobby a huge victory. And some Democrats actually did what Republicans did in 2018, which is watered down the bill. So, Erica, I'm sure you've seen similar fights happen in other states where powerful lobbyists wield immense power to essentially hurt the working class. What's your take on what's happening here? And is it just, in your view, a microcosm of a bigger issue where the management class continues just to stack victories against the working class?
Yeah, I mean, Pat, we're in a big epic battle between labor and capital. That's basically what's happening. And the National Restaurant Association has a $100 million annual budget. They have a very straightforward playbook. They go into areas where there are movements afoot to raise wages for service workers. They go in, they work with chain restaurants to pull all the employees in. They say, listen, if this bill goes through where you get one fair wage, we're going to go out of business. You're not going to make any more tips. They're going to eliminate tips. You're going to make less money. You'll probably lose your job. I'm going to cut your shifts. They basically go on a terror campaign to the employees of these large restaurants. And then they say to the employees, will you help us stop this thing that's going to hurt you and your family so badly? Why don't I give you some money and give you some time off so you can call your lawmakers? You know, y'all have been on a multi-year saga with this wage issue. And Winnie Brinks, who is the Senate Democratic Majority Leader, has previously been an incredible champion of the one fair wage issue. She's on the record multiple times saying that she supports one fair wage, that Michigan voters support one fair wage, and that she believes, as we do at the Patriotic Millionaires, that making the wage floor apply to everyone is a really essential part of a strong economy going forward. But what has happened is that the National Restaurant Association sees how important this Michigan fight is, and they have put a lot of resources behind it. So Winnie Brinks, her poor interns in her office, and a lot of other Democratic senators and lawmakers have been getting phone call, phone call, phone call after phone call by service workers saying, please don't do this. And they are unfortunately being tricked by the ruse. They are not seeing through the mirage. This is an orchestrated campaign by the National Restaurant Association to convince servers that a bill that pays them more money, a bill that guarantees them higher wages with tips on top, is actually going to hurt them. And this kind of misinformation by the National Restaurant Association has now led to a place where Democrats are worried. And they think maybe the people don't want this. Let me tell you something. Working people, service industry workers in one fair wage states make more money than service workers in non-one fair wage states. Restaurant business does better. If you think about it, Pat, why would you ever have one industry get a special carve out, and that special carve out is that they don't have to pay out of their business proceeds the compensation for the workers. This whole issue of tips is a legacy of slavery, when back in the day, they basically wanted to be able to avoid paying newly freed slaves. So they said, oh, we'll give you tips. Now, on the federal level, the tipped wage is $2.13. Guess how long that tipped wage has been in place? I'll tell you this. I was a waitress in college. I made $2.13 an hour, and I'm currently a 55-year-old mother of a fourth grader. So this tipped issue is so big, and the National Restaurant Association is a lobbying conglomeration that basically wants to make sure that nobody in their industry actually has to pay the people who work for them. So they've got this carve out, and they will fight tooth and nail to stop any increase. And it's really up to lawmakers like Winnie Brinks to see through this ruse and act accordingly.
The National Restaurant Association and the lobby, who is exactly behind that? Are we talking like corporate chains? I mean, is that who really is running this whole thing?
It's largely corporate chains. And I'll tell you what, I mean, these folks are really clever, Pat. So guess who the chief lobbyist for the National Restaurant Association is? It is a big time former Obama administration official. And then you go into, you can't make this stuff up. He's actually married to the chief fundraiser for a number of Democratic senators who have been opposed to increasing the tipped wage. So this kind of stuff gets very, very messy and complicated very quickly. And so it's really incumbent on lawmakers to be able to see through these kinds of shenanigans. And I just want the folks listening to think, do you really truly believe that thousands of service workers rose up organically to protest a bill that would give them a higher guaranteed wage through their paychecks and in addition give them tips on top of that? Do you really believe that service workers all over Michigan would rather do whatever they need to do to get their customers to voluntarily give them money, or would they rather have a wage through their employer and have tips on top? It does not even make sense on its face that these lawmakers are buying into this narrative that the National Restaurant Association is clearly funding and pushing to them. And so it's really incumbent on lawmakers to say, wait, this doesn't make sense to me. Let me look at what actually happens. And if you look at the states where 65 million people currently live, from Montana to Missouri to California, these are one fair wage states. In those states, there are 65 million people in those states. Those states have thriving restaurant businesses. The people who work in those restaurants make more money, and they have more certainty in the money that they make, because if they go to work in a snowstorm and nobody shows up for dinner, they still walk out with a fair wage. So this is really an essential transition. And one thing, Pat, that folks are not talking that much about, speaking of Elon Musk and the oligarchs up on stage with President Trump, we've got a revolution in automation and AI going on as we speak. I talked to somebody in Silicon Valley the other day. I said, gosh, there are not going to be nearly as many jobs 10 years from now as there are now. You know what she said to me? She said, Erica, it's not going to be 10 years. It's going to be faster than that. And so we've got a rapidly changing, you know, setup for workers, and they have a level of power right now and a huge amount of power in Michigan right now, because the only thing that has to happen in this debate right now is Winnie Brinks has to decide not to bring the second half of this bill to the floor. It's a little bit complicated, but basically they've got two bills moving through the House and the Senate. The two bills are tied together. One is the wage part, one is the sick leave part. If either one of those pieces fail, the entire thing goes away, and the original law that is the best law for working people will go into effect. So if people want to be helpful today, you should email Senate Majority Leader Winnie Brinks at senwbrinks@senate.michigan.gov. Go email her office and tell her that you believe every person in Michigan, including those who work in the restaurant industry, deserve the guarantee of an employer-required minimum wage. They should not have to rely on the good nature of strangers to make the rent. It is a better way to run an economy. It is better for business, and it creates more customers with more money to spend. This will be good for the economy and good for business. We've just got to get these Senate Democrats to do the right thing here.
I think the depressing part about all this, and you've already mentioned it, is State Senator Brinks, because like you said, she has been a champion of the one fair wage in the past. She's actually passed, made some votes that have been pro-worker, or at least in my viewpoint.
In fact, she hasn't just voted for it. She has been a very effective and very vocal champion, which is part of the reason why I think that we can turn this around. We know what Senator Brinks's heart is. Okay, she has been bamboozled by a $100 million organization that has been at this game for a really long time. And so I guarantee that she and some of her fellow Democratic senators have been overwhelmed by this lobbying push, this orchestrated kind of AstroTurf save our tips. Listen, you learn some things in the ladies' bathroom. And I want to tell you something, Pat. One of our folks was up in Lansing last week and ended up speaking to one of the representatives for the National Restaurant Association, who said that she had been paid $150 to be there on that day. So we already know the manipulation that the restaurants are doing to their employees. We already know they're threatening them with fewer hours, you know, restaurants going under, fewer tips and elimination of tips. We know what they're doing. It now appears that they may also be compensating people at a pretty significant rate to come in and argue against their own self-interest. So the whole thing is just kind of sad, but the thing is, it's very fixable. And Senator Winnie Brinks has the power to fix it. And we really hope that she will do that.
You mentioned saved my tips. That's MI tips. I wanted to ask you, since you brought it up, is that like a campaign arm of the restaurant lobby?
It is. And so it's a bunch of servers. If you go into any of the, and I've been in tons of these states, right? Where, I mean, they do this everywhere. It's exactly the same playbook every time. They've got a group of folks. They show up in green shirts. They're quite loud and vocal, and they say, you know, save our tips. We don't want one fair wage. They have been lied to by the National Restaurant Association and by their employers. And so they're there believing that their livelihood is at risk. It is not. We know exactly what happens in these states. But if you thought your livelihood was at risk and your boss told you to go make a phone call, I think you'd probably make a phone call. So lawmakers' job is to be able to see through this kind of nonsense. And this is not Senator Brinks nor Governor Whitmer's first rodeo. And so I hope that they will recognize what is happening and act accordingly.
Another thing of this whole saga, this whole story that surprised some of us here in Michigan is that you had state senators like Dana Polhanke out of Livonia, who, again, has in the past made some rather bold progressive votes when it comes to helping the working class. But she responded to me on Blue Sky when I said, I was basically criticizing the Democrats who voted with the Republicans in the state Senate on this bill. And this is what she said to me personally. She said, the hundreds of actual, and that was in capital letters, actual Michigan restaurant servers, as well as my actual constituents, by a margin of nearly 100-1, asked me to preserve some sort of a tipped wage. Don't doubt these. And then she put in parentheses, mostly women workers, when they tell you what they want. What would you say to Senator Polhanke?
My response is that we know exactly what happens when states move to one fair wage with tips on top, and that the goal of lawmakers should be to deliver more money directly into the pockets of their constituents. And that certainly a group like Patriotic Millionaires, which is not being influenced by groups like the National Restaurant Association, and our members are not afraid of losing our reelection. So I think we have a little bit of a calmer head about some of these things. I would say to her, we know the results. We know what's happened in the economy. We know the level of inequality that we are currently suffering. And the reason that you are hearing from one group of people is that they are being orchestrated. And the reason you are not hearing from all of the people who want to go to one fair wage is because they are too busy working their second job to take time out to call a lawmaker who is guaranteed to screw them. And this is the problem that the Democratic Party has. They consistently dismantle what their voters want. They do not stand up for working people since Bill Clinton passed NAFTA, and then President Obama passed tax cuts for millionaires, and then Hillary Clinton made a series of $250,000 speeches to Wall Street. Working people have had enough. and they need these resources. They deserve to be paid a fair share of the proceeds of business. And the single only way that is going to happen is by lawmakers changing the law to make it happen. The law as it stands in Michigan today is one of the strongest wage floors in the country. And Pat, it is still grossly inadequate. The median cost of living for a person in Michigan for a single adult with no children is $40,000 a year, $20 an hour. Your minimum wage law will take your wages up to $15 an hour 5 years from now, which still requires an individual to work 6 days a week, 11 hours a day, in order to be able to put a roof over their head and food in their body. And if you want to know how much food that is, there's a little tool called the MIT Living Wage Calculator. You can see how much it costs to live every town in the country. And in Michigan, these numbers provide folks about $300 a month for food. So you've got $85 a month for food. You've got about $800 a month for rent. These things add up, goes up to 40,000. Y'all got 40% of the people in Michigan make less than that. And then you've got this mechanism through tips that is this mechanism that makes sure even though your law says people can make a certain amount of money, if you rely on the customer to give them half of it or 60% or 70% of it, you can guarantee that that minimum wage threshold is not ever met. So I appreciate the fact that people are confused. I appreciate the fact that servers don't trust lawmakers further than they can throw them, and that things are so uncertain right now, they don't want any other changes. I appreciate that. The role of lawmakers is to understand what is best in terms of delivering economic resources into people in their communities. And we know one fair wage works. And I challenge lawmakers to, when these folks call them, press them. Has somebody asked you to call me today? Do you believe that you will make fewer tips if this law goes into effect? Why are they making this phone call? They're making this phone call because they've received a swath of misinformation from a multi-million dollar national organization that is committed to keeping them poor.
Perhaps it's instances like this are reasons why we have so many people not voting at all, because they know exactly what Republicans are all about. They know that Republicans are all about the billionaire class, the management class. They get that. And maybe what drives them down even more and maybe put their hands up and say, I don't know if I should even vote, is when you do get moves like this from some Democrats. Maybe that is one reason why people just say, what's the point of voting? Which is sad, because we're seeing how damaging that can be, as with President Trump now in the White House. But still, I can understand that, I guess.
Listen, apathy is the best voter suppression there is, you know, and we've got folks like Senator Winnie Brinks, who, as we said earlier, she has been a big champion for this. She has looked at the data. She self-professed it. I've spent 6 years championing this issue of one fair wage as a state senator. I think she has been bamboozled. I think the Restaurant Association spent a huge amount of money on these efforts in Michigan, because they know that if Michigan moves to the better system, the rest of the country will follow.
Erica, you brought up Governor Gretchen Whitmer here, and I think it's pretty obvious that she has some aspirations, presidential aspirations, when her term is up. But issues like this are going to be pretty huge, I think, when you get on the campaign trail, especially when you're trying to get the Democratic base to be on your side. Are you a little disappointed at how she's handled this whole thing?
Gretchen Whitmer will lose in 2028 because of this position. If she does not reverse this position that she is currently taken, she will, number one, she will lose the primary 100%, because there is zero possibility she will get through the primary with this kind of position. Number two, she will definitively lose the general election if she happens to squeak through the primary, because people will see her as dishonest as they see these Democrats who have been selling out working people since Bill Clinton passed NAFTA. So Gretchen Whitmer, I encourage her to prove her presidential mettle right now. I'm worried she's going to end up being an empty pink suit, Pat. That's my worry. And I'll tell you, a lot of Democratic donors who are really sick of spending millions and millions of dollars to lose, and even when they win, the country is not fixed because Democrats are too beholden to moneyed interest and to lobbyists. And, you know, they are looking for a winner, and they're looking for somebody who's is actually going to fix these problems. And Gretchen Whitmer had a great brand, and she is in the process of trashing it. So she has got a few days to pull this back, to make a stand for working people, and to prove that she has the chops to be the leader of the free world and to take on J.D. Vance or whoever's standing in Donald Trump's stead. And right now, this position on this issue is leading me to believe that she is not strong enough to take on this job. And I think you are going to see Democrats jump off the Gretchen Whitmer ship quickly and often if she does not reverse this. Now, on the flip side, Pat, if she considers all of the information that's coming at her, recognizes what the National Restaurant Association has done and decides to make a stand, both for working people and, frankly, for business owners and democratic capitalists, she can make this whole thing go away and stand up and give a fiery speech about what we need to keep our democratic capitalist country together, and that includes good wages for working people, which means they have money to spend at businesses when they walk out and clock out and become customers. She could make that speech. She could establish that principle. She could stand up for working people. And then I'll bet she'd be the number one in the ranks for this. So she's got a choice to make: presidential material or empty pink suit. It's up to her.
All right. Erica Payne, founder and CEO of Patriotic Millionaires, and also author of Tax the Rich: How Lies, Loopholes, and Lobbyists Make the Rich Even Richer. Before I let you go, can you talk about that book just for a second and what it's all about?
Yeah. So we wrote a book several years ago called Tax the Rich: How Lies, Loopholes, and Lobbyists Make the Rich Even Richer. Tax policy. If anybody out there thinks the economy is rigged against them, I got news for you. You're right. How do you rig an economy? You start with the tax code. And so the chair of our organization, who is a guy named Morris Pearl, he was a big BlackRock financial managing director. He's as brainy as they come. We sat down and we said, let's make the tax code fun, funny, and easy to understand. And if we do that, we will be able to get more people fighting to unrig this economy that is rigged through the tax code. So we wrote this book a few years ago. The first chapter of the book is What is Rich?, which we thought was a really important thing to establish. Our members do not have any interest in taxing anyone other than people like them who make more than $1 million a year or have assets of more than $5 million a year. Tax the Rich goes up and down, soup to nuts, through the tax code in the United States that was implemented by Trump in 2017 and then not particularly changed by Democrats when they had full control. And you read the book and it will make your head explode, but you will actually understand what is going on with the tax code and how bad it is. And if you don't have a full book in you, there's a 15-minute PowerPoint presentation that we do that compares two couples, the work hearts and the slumps, and helps people see if you're a working person, you're low man on the totem pole for the tax code, you're carrying the burden, while people who inherit money, corporate leaders, corporations, multinational corporations, and millionaires like our members basically get away with murder. So taxtherich.com, if you go on that site, you can see the PowerPoint presentation and buy the book. It's good. It's funny. And it has lots of cartoons in it.
That's great.
We actually made a funny book about tax policy. People said it could not be done, but it can be.
Well, I'll make sure to put a link to your book to taxtherich.com and also a link to Patriotic Millionaires. Erica Payne, thank you so very much for being on Left of Lansing this weekend. If you don't mind, I'd love to have you back again soon.
I'd love it, Pat. This was fun. Thanks so much.
It's the Left of Lansing podcast with Pat Johnston. Need to give Pat a piece of your mind, or do you have some stories you think Pat should cover? Email him at leftoflansing@gmail.com. And if you have Michigan beer ideas for Pat, he'll love you even more. Now, here's Pat.
Thanks again to Erica Payne for coming on the show this week. Time now for the Left of Lansing last call. Okay, I have to play this because I feel like it is a microcosm of what is ailing the leadership inside the Democratic Party right now. Just listen.
Captain Chaos and the extreme MAGA Republicans spent last year promising to lower the high cost of living and running away from Project 2025 as if it didn't exist.
Okay, that, of course, was House Minority Leader, Democratic Congressman Hakeem Jeffries of New York, using his obvious focus group name for dear leader called Captain Chaos. Ugh. So kids, for Gen Xers like me, I hear Captain Chaos. I think Dom DeLuise in the Burt Reynolds Cannonball Run flicks. I mean, Captain Chaos. I mean, look those movies up if you haven't seen them. I mean, they feature Roger Moore, Terry Bradshaw, Sammy Davis Jr., Dean Martin. I mean, I think Jackie Chan was in there too. Stupid movies, but yet funny and classic movies. Anyway, like Huffington Post reported, Hakeem Jeffries' new moniker for Dear Leader got dumped on by many progressives and liberals alike. I agree with this one post by someone who goes by the name Jeezaws. That's Jeezaws. And they posted, Captain Chaos genuinely effing sounds endearing. Like a superhero could be named Captain Chaos. Is Hakeem Jeffries actually stupid, or is he being paid to look like an effing dumbass? Oh, man. And again, I can't get Dom DeLuise out of my head now. Captain Chaos. Dear Leader probably, though, loves being known as Captain Chaos. You know it. I know it. He probably does. Our country is being overrun by these billionaire tech bros who never liked democracy. They said it for many years, and now they've got power and are working right in front of all of our eyes to turn this country into an autocracy, and all Jeffries can come up with right now is Captain Chaos? I mean, these so-called leaders are letting us down big time. And please, everyone, stop listening to James Carville, who's telling Democrats to just sit back and wait until Dear Leader makes the mistake. I mean, I hate to sound like George Bailey from It's a Wonderful Life, but wait for what? President Musk is raiding the Treasury with his minions of 20-year-olds who are gutting the USDA during the bird flu, gutting the U.S. aid programs, which helps spread the goodwill across the globe here from this country, not to mention while helping our farmers, and who are also looking into our personal records and Social Security information while not officially holding a title in the White House. And meanwhile, Dear Leader's busy leaving Ukraine out to dry, shutting down the Kennedy Library, ending vaccine mandates in schools, guaranteeing we'll get some more measles outbreaks across the country like we're back in the 1950s. And maybe I guess that's what MAGA always meant, is that they wanted to make America great again before we could vaccinate for measles. More measles for everyone. That would have been a hell of a bumper sticker. Things are falling apart everywhere. Planes are falling out of the sky. And Hakeem Jeffries can only come with Captain Chaos. A new Quinnipiac poll just came out this week showing Dear Leader with a 45% approval rating, which isn't really good for someone in their first month as president. But here's some bad news for us, okay? Listen, while Republicans in Congress have a paltry 40% approval rating, Democrats have a stunning 21% approval rating. 21%! And you know that's due to many Democratic voters out there showing their disdain for the Democratic leadership. Like the Bulwark's Tim Miller posted here this week, a Dem Tea Party is going to overthrow Hakeem and Chuck Schumer if they don't start turning all this stuff up to 11. It might be healthy. It might be self-sabotaging. I don't know. But the demand in the market is too great to resist. Someone will fill it. He's right. I mean, someone will have to fill the void because this is not sustainable, everyone.
You're listening to the Left of Lansing podcast. The music you're hearing is by Wander Beats. To hear the latest project, check out Space Leopard on your favorite streaming site. Now back to our favorite progressive voice in Michigan. It's Pat Johnston.
That's going to do it for this edition of The Left of Lansing. Again, contact Winnie Brinks. That's senwbrinks@senate.michigan.gov. And let her know you want to keep the paid sick leave law as is and to prevent the watered-down minimum wage raises from gaining immediate effect. Right now, all we can do is let them know that we are watching them. Please let me know what you think of the show by emailing me at leftoflansing@gmail.com. And everyone, here's something to warm your heart just a touch. The Detroit Tigers played their first spring training game this Saturday afternoon at 1 p.m. So while we may be experiencing cold and snow during these dog days of winter, when you hear Dan Dickerson's voice on the radio, you know that it's baseball season, which means spring is not too far away. See, I can bring a little optimism to the show full of frustration and angst, but that's how change can happen, through frustration, if utilized correctly through our political system and through the ballot box. And it can happen by cultivating and embracing the progressive messaging ecosystem that's already quite prevalent here in the state. So until next week, remember, take the battle to them. Thank you, Michigan.
The Left of Lansing podcast was produced by Pat Johnston. Written by Pat Johnston. Researched by Pat Johnston. Edited by Pat Johnston. And hosted by, yes, Pat Johnston. Technical assistance by Dr. Heather. And thanks to our good friend Kirsten for the awesome podcast logo. Remember to visit leftoflansing.com for more news and information. Thanks again for listening to the Left of Lansing podcast.